Mr. Bloom, we want to continue on this new tape discussing the Chronicle.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, the Chronicle has been organized with a constitution that enables new boards to be chosen on a joint committee with Federation. The Federation appoints three persons under the present constitution, the president of Federation and two other persons. Actually, there should be some representation from the community at large, but very often they either are present or former board members of the Federation. And the Chronicle appoints three members, the president of the Chronicle, plus two other members. This might not be the best way to do it because it doesn't give a broader picture, but that's the way it's done. Eventually, it really, in effect, the president of the Chronicle sits on his own nominating committee.
Now, how you as the editor of the Chronicle, what was your relationship to this board?
Well, I was chosen by the first board, of which Joseph W. Feldman was the president. He was one of the towering intellectual and active figures in this community, and he had been president of the JCRC, the Jewish Community Relations Council, and a very bright fellow, and chairman of the board, I guess, of Feldman and Kahn Advertising Agency.
This was in 1962?
62. Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose yes. They started earlier, but
you were appointed, you were...
I was chosen in 1962.
In 1962, yes.
And Joe Feldman and I had known one another, and you might ask me how I came to the Jewish field. Maybe that might be interesting to you. I have always felt that every Jewish person, no matter who he is, should at one time or another lay his talents and energy at the feet of the Jewish community and the Jewish people at large. Now, some people are able to exercise this by a checkbook and giving donations and so on. Some by doing tzedakah, which means really not charity but righteousness, in a more personal way. Some people have God-given talents or energies, and they can lay those at the feet of the Jewish people at some time in their lives. I was responsive to this kind of a surge from within my gut. That's why I've been trained in my family life. And whereas if anybody had told me even 2 years before 1962 that I would be working for the Jewish community, I would spit in his eye. I have no desire or whatever to leave the daily field whatsoever. As a matter of fact, you might be interested to know that when the appointment was made, and my publisher, Bill Block, of whom I told you before, when he heard about it, he called me down and he says, "What are you doing? You're crazy. You have the world with a ribbon around it. You do what you want. You write what you want. And you're going into from a daily to a weekly field. Why would you ever want to do that?" Mm-hmm. And I didn't put it in the way that I just put it to you a little earlier, because that might sound a little too affected, shall we say. But those were my heart's feelings. So I just said, I'd like to be a small-town editor in a big town. Every newspaper man wants to be his own boss and run his own newspaper. It was an opportunity to run a small-town newspaper in a big city. So that was part of the picture, but that wasn't the heart's heart. And anyway, that's something that he would be able to understand. But he said it doesn't make any sense. He said, "And besides, in 25 years, there won't be a Jewish community." So I laughed. And at that time, Chancellor Litchfield was Chancellor of the University of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And every month or so, he used to sit down and with some newspaper men and publishers and discuss university aspects and the aim to make the University of Pittsburgh an international university. And we were at the dinner once, at lunch, with Litchfield. Bill Block was there. And it was just shortly after my appointment. It was announced, And Bill Block was kind of twitting me, and he says, well, he says, Al, he says, when are you going to write your first anti-Israel editorial? And I paused for a moment. I said, well, Bill, the day after the Post-Gazette writes an anti-birth control editorial. He got the point. And there was silence and laughter, and it was all disappointed. All dissipated. Yeah. Because I told you, his lovely wife, Maxine, was head of Planned Parenthood at that time. So, you know, it just, I fended him off and he fended me off. Yeah. And it was, we both understood what the pressures of newspaper life were about. Anyway, I actually developed the starting issues of the Chronicle in the Post-Gazette sitting room, because I had my feet in both directions. As a matter of fact, Ed Steiner, who was my assistant, had been working for the Outlook. I had taught Ed Steiner, who's now dead, I'm sorry to say, at Duquesne University. He was a Korean War veteran and came into college after the Korean War. And he and another young man from Pittsburgh who's in the Federation field came back to college, and as you know, kids who came back to college later were kind of, you know, a little more macho than the young students who had not had experiences. And I had to tame them both down, but then Ed and I became very good friends, and he was a wonderful asset to me in starting the Chronicle, and I bless his memory. He was a dear friend. And sorry to lose him. His and his family to this day are dear friends of ours. At any rate, the Post-Gazette and they really had a hand in spawning the Jewish Chronicle, you might say. And Joe Feldman and I went down to one of the art studios to develop the logotype. The logotype is the name of the
paper.
The logotype in the Chronicle. It was on a Friday. It's not a Friday. And as you know, Friday's beginning of Shabbos, and Joe and I went down, and Joe himself is not observant, so didn't make too much concern, but he knew that I was, and we had to make these choices, the different types and how, and the day was getting shorter, and we both were watching the day, and we made the decision that it should be the Jewish Chronicle, or whatever other name it should be, and we chose the type, we chose the name, and we got out, and I got home in time for Shabbos. So I thought that was a very auspicious kind of way to start a Jewish publication in a Jewish community. But I'll never forget how that sun was setting and time was of the essence, and we had to make these decisions, because then, you know, what's in a name? I don't have to tell you. It's going to be in perpetuity. Another incident you might be interested in, that before my interview with Bob Hiller, who was executive director in those days, before it became fashionable to have executives, executive vice president. And, he was the executive director of the United Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, and Joe Feldman, who was to be the first president of the Jewish Chronicle, as an affiliate of the Federation, not a beneficiary, but as an affiliate. At any rate, we met at 3500 Fifth Avenue in Joe's apartment. Bob Hiller, Joe Feldman, myself. We were in an 8-hour interview, because they asked me what I thought of the community, how I would handle a paper, what I would do, my attitudes. We were going on for almost 8 hours, almost as long as this interview.
Yeah, yeah.
And towards the end, one of them said to me, well, I'd like to ask you one more question. Let me ask you one more question. Sure. He said, how will your Jewish attitudes affect the way you handle the paper, how you're observant, and how. So I looked at them both and paused. I said, well, I said, gentlemen, for 18 years or so, I've been making my way professionally in the Gentile world. And this is the first time that anybody questioned my religion. There was silence in the room for an instant. And then it broke and everybody ran for the bathroom because we hadn't had a break in 8 hours. And almost all of my career in the Jewish field, which is much tougher than the daily field, for a variety of reasons, one of which I'll mention to you, nobody has ever made that question seriously make it stick. Mm-hmm. Although we haven't come beyond that in the Jewish community, there's always somebody willing to say, your religious attitude, or your social attitude, or your political attitude, how is that fair? To this day, that has not been erased from Jewish communal life. Now, people might say they're the most objective and the most honest, and they don't care about those things. But what they say, and what they do, and what they act, very often gives you a completely different an antipodal relationship, 180 degrees different. And that is in some of our best friends, if I may use the expression.
Along these lines, would you tell us
about
your editorial policy? A little bit about your editorial policy.
Well, the editorial policy was a very simple rule of thumb, and that is, although many people were concerned that the Federation would dominate the community, and many organizations, including ones that you folks belong to, no doubt, possibly, were a little concerned. You know, one organization, namely the Federation, was going to dominate the news, and nobody else was going to get any light or sound. From the beginning, I felt, and the board concurred with me, that what we would operate the Chronicle so that every organization would feel that it was getting a fair shake, that nobody was going to be left out of out of consideration, and each one would have its place in the sun. Now, I must say that there's no question that since the Federation raises the most funds in town, it certainly gets a lot of exposure. But at the same time, I don't think, in my regime at any rate, that any organization felt it was getting short shrift. And I used to bend over backward to make sure that not only in fact, but in thought, nobody should feel that way. And if I heard by rumor somebody said, oh, so-and-so is getting so-and-so, I would try to go out of my way personally to contact. See. And this makes a great difference between a daily and a weekly newspaper. As a matter of fact, some of my friends at the Post-Gazette said, what are you going into a daily field for? He says, the work is enormous, your staff is small, and you'll...
Weekly field.
Yeah.
Oh, the weekly field, I'm sorry. Yeah. And... one of my colleagues at the Post-Gazette said, you don't know what you're getting into. He says, "In within a half a day, you're going to have work up to your ears." And he didn't use the word ears.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, you do everything.
Yeah.
Whereas in a daily, there's compartments and departments. At any rate, and the attitudes of the public are different. You take a very proper matron, be hatted, be gloved with a single strand of pearls at her neck, as one time was the matron's medal, young matron's medal, high heels, sharply dressed, Lord and Taylor complete. She comes into the city room of a daily newspaper, prim, voice lowered, timid, very polite, and says, may I have this paragraph up for consideration in your newspaper. Very well modulated. And you complete your business, and she primly walks out. Scene changes.
Right.
Same young matron. Gloved, behatted, single set of pearls, high heels, pointed toes, Lord and Taylor fashioned. Comes into the Jewish Chronicle, and on those gloves, they're invisible brass knuckles. Tough, hard, voice rising, how come organization X got more space than we got? They're not as good as we are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How dare you? We have this, and this is our biggest thing. Very tough. The same, very same young matron. I use that example. You take the soberest judge in town, who's Jewish, in his courtroom. Sober, quiet, the judicial temperament incarnate in the courtroom. Make him chairman of the Chaim Shmerl Dance Committee. He comes in like a storm.
How do you account for this?
How do you account for it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether you can count. You can account for it unless you want to do a PhD research study. I think some of it has the effect of he's at home.
Yes,
it's his home.
Oh, you think that's it?
He's at home.
His family.
Yeah,
he can let down his hair.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a characteristic of.
And you see that anybody going on you, people behave differently in the standard club than they behave in the Duquesne club. I don't say they yell all over the place, but the reins, they're reined in the Duquesne club and they're not in the JCC. I think that's the kindest way to explain
yes.
it.
Yeah.
There are other ways I don't know.
Your policy then was to do your best to see that all aspects of the Jewish community was represented as equally as you could.
And every organization get a fair share.
Yes, yes.
But we do not deny, but I did not deny the fact that since the Federation is the prime fundraising agency and the fundraising consensus was an important one, that this did have an effect on the exposure, and also the concern about how you run the stuff. In other words, do you want to expose somebody who had a violent divorce? Do you want to expose somebody who's? I can give you a lot of examples that I want to go on tape. Do you want to be a more sensationalist? And we decided, and the board agreed, that we would rather err on the side of caution in those things. Somebody's arrested for income tax or scandalous divorce or problems like that. That was not our cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Unless it affected the Jewish community in some way. If it affected an individual, nope, that's the individual's business. If it affected community, then it's a different matter. I mean, God forbid if somebody absconded from some organization or something like that. But we were very careful when shul battles of between the president and the rabbi or whatever, that was just not our cup of tea. If they wrecked one another in a busy street, maybe that's different. But there are battles inside, as there have been, as you know, if you turn over your mind. You'll see there were some.
How long were you editor of the Chronicle?
22 years.
What difference do you see it toward the end of your term there compared to when it began? How was
well,
it
I think
grow,
we
consist- would you say?
I think we consistently grew in two areas. We were stronger and more vigorous, and B, we pulled the community together and unify the community in a way that no other organization was able to do or can do at any time, because we are an area of communication in which we have no individual axe to grind one way or another in terms of turf or of fundraising or of notoriety. That's, you know, we're not concerned with that. We weren't concerned with that. We were concerned with the total Jewish community, and no organization can say fully that it is concerned with a total Jewish community in terms of any other organization. I don't know if I make myself clear. Every organization would like to say it represents it, but no matter what organization you have, It's going to say, well, we have our own turf, and other organizations have their own turf. And if we don't go into theirs, maybe they won't come into our turf. And that's policy, attitude, programming, whatever. But the Chronicle, the Chronicle is interested in serving all and giving but not taking. And that's what makes it different. Even in terms of fundraising, the great fundraising organizations would not like other fundraising organizations to get in the way of their fundraising activities. But the Chronicle has no such areas of over-concern. Its aim is to serve the Jewish community in its local, national, international, and especially in its Israel concerns, because we're a post-Holocaust community, all of the Jewish world, and we're a Israel rebirth generation community. And those are our imperatives. If you want two things that gives you your imperative in the Jewish Chronicle in terms of education and information, you have the Holocaust and you have the rebirth of State of Israel. And you have to be careful that you don't try educate a generation that one came because of the other. We would never want to say that the State of Israel arose on the ashes of the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is frightful if anybody thinks in those terms.
Not true.
We like to say it the other way. I like to say, if there were a State of Israel, maybe there would not be a Holocaust. That's what I like to say.
Have you encountered resistance or any problems or objections of people accepting any of your editorials or any of the editorials that were in the Chronicles on this very subject?
Oh, sure. There are many scholarly debates. In fact, it was conventional wisdom for a long time in the post-war era to say that that Israel was born on the ashes of the Holocaust, which I find to be frightful. A frightful thought if you see the implications. And that's why I feel intellectually, historically, you have to just reverse that 180 degrees. Had there been an Israel, you could have saved 6 million. That's the...
Well, that has really been fascinating discussion. And we want to talk about your retirement. But before we get into your retirement in the Chronicle, let's go back and talk about your family.
Oh, good.
You're not giving me a crack at
you. Oh, excuse me.
I wanted to talk about your writing awards before you got into anything else.
Oh, well, I listed a bunch of them for you.
Yes, would you like to tell us about them? Because I think that's highly important go into something else. Yes, I didn't know you did.
Well, I don't know if I have them all here. And I don't say that immodestly.
You can remark about any of those.
Yeah. I hold the Hadassah National Myrtle Leaf Award from Hadassah. That's a national honor. I hold an award from the National Conference of Christians and Jews.
Oh, I don't have that.
I hold an award from the Jewish War Veterans of America. I hold several awards from the Zionist Organization of America, the ZOA, including some citations of honor. Some of them are on the plate rails around you, Evelyn's in mine, some of them. I hold a wartime honor from the Chinese government, the Order of the Cloud and Banner, a medal from there. I hold 3 battle stars from the United States government, 3 battle stars in World War II. I hold the Freedom Medal, with which everybody's. I told you about the Century Club award from Duquesne University, honoring those graduates whose professional life has reflected honor and credit upon Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. I hold the American Jewish Press Association award, the Ruckauer Award from the AJPA, on a series on Hungary, the Hungarian.
Where was that printed? I mean, where?
That was printed in the Jewish Chronicle.
Okay.
And circulated by the American Jewish Press Association. It dealt with a Hungarian, model, the idea of how Hungary was able to develop Kézai independently while having a strong eye on the Soviet Union, to which it is closely allied. But the Hungarian model was trying to introduce some free enterprise as against the rigidity of the socio-economic attitudes of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, in Middle Europe, you will find Romania very rigid inside and with much elbow room in its foreign policy, contrary to the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
Hungary also, contrary to the Soviet Union, has a good deal of leeway in personal activity, Kézai free enterprise within Hungary, but rigid in its foreign policy. So two Middle European nations are developing within the communist orbit in different directions.
Right.
And I did that study on the Hungarian model. By the way, somewhere around that time, we also visited with the American Jewish Press Association, the United Jewish Appeal, nationally. We visited Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp. You know, most of the killing, the worst killing center was not Auschwitz, but a subsidiary of Auschwitz, which was Birkenau. And it's very interesting to note that when we were there, since I'm on the subject of Middle Europe, it was snowing. And in Auschwitz-Birkenau, and we were in the long cantonments, barracks of death. And we had a bus there, a Polish bus, and the snow started to come down fast and heavily, and we were going to be marooned in Auschwitz-Birkenau overnight. And in the darkening night, we were as close to the one killing center, furnaces as you are to the end of that fireplace. And we had to get the truck out, the van. My wife Evelyn and I and some others got out of the bus in the snow and started to push it out. And we were right near the stream in Birkenau, where I don't know how many thousands of ashes of Jewish lives were dumped. We were just the edge. If we would get into that rut, into that stream, we would never get out in that cold and ice. And my wife, Ellen, and I were putting plastic sacks and sheets underneath the wheels to move the truck out. And it was such an experience, such a bizarre and crazy kind of experience of... It made me think how much, as I've always said in my writings, that in effect we are all survivors of the Holocaust.
Yes.
And it's very interesting, that was a very interesting experience. I say it tangentially to this list of
awards you were called.
And
this
I
writing
hold,
award.
I also hold the smaller award of the CJF, the National Council of Jewish Federations, on a series Behind the Arab Curtain. In 1976, we went a group of editors, Jewish and non-Jewish. Some of those editors from non-Jewish papers happen to be Jewish. We went to Lebanon, Beirut. We went to Syria. We went to Jordan. We went to Egypt, and as well as Israel. And in Syria, in the town square, I used to throw open the curtain in the morning and put on my Towson Tillin in full view of the window. So if they were going to do any shooting, they had a clear shot. Nobody said anything to me. However, when I used to mail my letters, when I used to be near the postal box, very often somebody would come up either from our party or from the Syrian officers who were escort officers and said, "Would you like me to mail your letter?" And I would say very politely, "No, thank you. I'll mail it myself." So if they wanted to open up, they would have to do it on their own.